listening nightly to our favorite shows. Radio, oh, why did you ever go? Oh, won't you please come back and entertain us? I long to turn the dial again to hear the past smile again. Radio, I miss you so.
Once again, it's time for Yesteryear. A look back at your favorite dramas, westerns, comedies, and musical variety shows from the golden age of radio. Here's your host for Yesteryear, Craig Roberts.
Time once again to settle into your favorite easy chair for another hour of vintage radio. Later on, we'll experience murder at midnight. But first, on the lighter side, let's get educated in The Halls of Ivy. The Halls of Ivy starred Ronald Colman, who, for the first decade of radio's life, avoided the microphone with a passion. The Halls of Ivy was first heard on NBC in 1950. It ran Wednesday nights until 1952. With Colman came his wife, Benita Hume, who had accompanied him on the Jack Benny program and had quite equally charming as a light comedian. The Halls of Ivy was tailor-made for the Colmans, suiting their lifestyle and their timing perfectly. The program was created by Don Quinn, a veteran of nearly two decades with Fibber McGee and Molly, and he put the Halls of Ivy together. Nat Wolff directed. The theme, The Halls of Ivy, was sung by a hollowed Ivy League fashion choir. Quinn's writing, as always, was first rate. But the success of The Halls of Ivy mainly rested with the Colmans. Return with us now to those exciting days of yesteryear with The Halls of Ivy. We'll give a listen to a rare recording of the original audition program from June of 1949. Another classic show from the golden age of radio here on Yesteryear.
Major Bowes, I miss the shadow nose, Fred Allen's alley folks, the laughter of Duffy's Tavern, Helen Trent. Oh, then we went to Can You Top This? Suspense in the Whistler sent those shivers up our spines. Uncle Don, I wish that he was on. Jack Armstrong, Merton Marr, Jameis, and Andy.
That surround us here today, and we will not forget though we be far.
Welcome to Ivy, the town of Ivy and Ivy College. It is coeducational and non-sectarian, and its age is indicated by the fact that until recently, the curriculum required 2 years of Greek. Ivy is all American. Its student body is a pretty fair cross-section of our country's youthful seekers of knowledge, with a small smattering of time wasters, those fun-loving rovers who infest every college campus. Dr. William Hall, PhD, LLD, and MA, is president of Ivy, at least until the end of the month. His reappointment will shortly be under discussion by the Board of Regents, now meeting in the boardroom in the east wing of the library.
I have to catch the 4 o'clock train.
Hope you can make it this weekend.
Aren't we about finished? Remember the days you used to get a $20 gold piece?
Gentlemen, I regret that this has been a rather long, drawn-out session, and your restlessness is excusable. However, we have one more item of business on our agenda, and an important one. It concerns the reappointment of Dr. Hall as president.
We can make that unanimous.
Be a fine president.
It seems to me, as chairman of this board, that Dr. Hall's record is so eminently satisfactory that there can be no serious obstacle in the way of his confirmation. His 6 years of service has been... Mr. Wellman?
Yes. What about Mrs. Hall?
Wellman, for heaven's sake, what are you talking about?
What about Mrs. Hall, Mr. Wellman?
Well, I've nothing against the lady personally, but it seems to me that this is hearsay, of course, and I don't ordinarily pay much attention to...
Will you
gossip,
please get to the point, Mr. Wellman, if there is one?
There is one. Put it bluntly, there is some doubt in my mind whether a man whose wife is an ex-actress and a musical comedy actress at that is the right woman. I mean, if he is the right man to be president of a college like Ivy, with a conservative tradition...
Well, there is hardly a reason...
Gentlemen,
Dr. Hall's record is beyond reproach.
Please! Mr. Wellman has raised a point which, however seriously it should be taken, does have a bearing on Dr. Hall's reappointment at an increased stipend. My personal feeling, for your information, is that Mrs. Hall's charm and sympathy for and with the younger element is a definite advantage to Dr. Hall's work. This is one opinion. You may hold contrary ones, but I should like to confine the discussion to a period of 1/2 hour. At that time, we will vote for or against reappointment. Mr. Merriweather?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not an Ivy alumnus. I just happen to be a filthy, rich old man who's dropped some fairly large sums of money on your campus. But when I went to a college, which shall be nameless, the Prexy had an old battle axe of a wife.
Wait a minute, Merriweather. The dignity of this college is...
Gentlemen, order, please. May I remind you that appointing a president of this college is a serious matter, and any pertinent discussion should also be serious. The question of Dr. Hall's fitness...
Toddy, dear, must you pace back and forth like that, like a hyena in a zoo?
A hyena? It's a rather rude comparison, Victoria. A hyena is a nasty animal. If we must be zoological, let me be something a little more noble. A tiger.
A lion. That's what you are. The king of the beasts.
Well, thank you.
And like a lion, you must be brave, dear.
My dear woman, bravery in a college president, even in a former college president...
No, don't say that.
Well, it could happen. But as I was saying, bravery in a college president is a superfluous virtue. Practically the only virtue not absolutely required. College president must watch over his young, play politics, and be begging constantly for money. He must be a combination babysitter, ward healer, and panhandler.
And you love it.
God help me, I do. Anyway, a situation such as this calls for more patience than courage. If the regents of this college... What do you suppose they're doing at their blasted board meeting? Playing Pachisi?
Now, temper, Toddy, temper. Successful babysitters and panhandlers never lose their tempers.
I know. And will you please try not to call me Toddy, even in these sacred precincts? Someday you'll use it in front of some eager young beaver in the School of Journalism. 3 weeks later, they'll find me at my desk with a hole in my head and a smoking pistol in my hand.
I'll try, dear. I know what the cheerleaders would do with it, too. Now tell me, how do they notify you that you're to be booked for another term?
Booked is hardly the word, Victoria. I am not a juggling act.
Well, we all have our professional phrases, dear. You know, sometimes I think...
Well, here it is. Te morituris salutami.
What does that mean?
It means here's mud in your eye from we who are about to be reappointed, or not. Latin.
Well, let's get it over with. I'll let them in, and you'll be busily reading your fan mail. Or something.
Hello, Mrs. Hall. Gee, I'm glad you're home. Can you give me a few minutes?
Oh, well, frankly, Pushy, it's rather an awkward time, but what's the trouble?
Oh, it's that waltz clog I'm doing in the Junior Follies. I can't seem to remember it. Would you brush me up a little?
Ask them in, Victoria.
Yes, dear. Come in, Pushy.
Gee, I'm sorry to bother you all the time, Mrs. Hall, but the way you explain things, they're clear as crystal. And when I get up at rehearsal, I... Oh, hello, Dr. Hall.
Hello, Morgan. Do you bring a message from the Board of Regents?
No, sir, I don't.
I've been trying to teach Pushy a dance for the Junior Follies, William. A waltz clog. He wants to brush up a bit.
Really? Now?
Yes, sir. The Junior Follies is only 9 weeks away. I don't seem to be picking this stuff up very fast.
Well, that's a very modest statement, Pushy, and very truthful. Pull the rug aside while I put a record on. What were we using?
Oh, the Sidewalks of New York, remember?
I say, Victoria, I don't like to seem stuffy, but do you think that just at this particular time...
Does sound a bit like fireworks at a wake, doesn't it? Well, I think I can put Pushy right in almost no time.
Hey, look, if this is inconvenient, Mrs. Hall, I mean, if Dr. Hall is expecting something important...
No. Please, go ahead. After all, this is an institution of learning.
Am I in the way?
Certainly not, dear. Just stand over there by the piano. Pushy has an unfortunate habit of flinging his feet sideways. It makes for a very loose line in the chorus. Now watch, Pushy. Mm-hmm. See? Now don't toss yourself about too much. Contain yourself. Economical movements. Move the shoulders as little as possible. Now you try it.
Gee, it sure looks easy when you do it. Okay. One, two, three. One, two,
oh,
three. One,
dear.
Two, three.
Now
one,
hold
two,
it. Hold it, Pushy. Huh? Stop the music, will you please, William?
Gladly.
And may I say, Morgan, I don't think you do too badly.
Well, thank you, sir. I know I'm no Fred Astaire, but Mrs. Hall is a wonderful teacher. What was I doing wrong, Mrs. Hall?
Well, your balance is all wrong, Pushy. Now, you watch how I shift my weight. Now, you see, here's what you were doing.
Oh, I think I see what you mean. Look, more like this, huh? One, two, three, one, two, three, one,
there.
Two, three, one, two, three, one,
no,
two, three.
No, you're beginning to get it. Oh, now just practice and practice and practice. Just try to think of your upper body and arms wrapped up like a mummy. Be tight.
Oh, gee, that does it. I think I know now. Oh, thanks, Mrs. Hall. This is going to be the best show we ever had, Doctor.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing it, Morgan. Are you one of the leads?
Oh, he's the lead, William. He sings even better than he dances.
I hope. You know, this whole thing scares me to death. When I think of opening night and me doing that waltz clog in front of all those people, gee, I'd almost rather be back in Okinawa. Almost, that is.
Okinawa? Were you?
Yes, dear, he was. Now, keep on practicing, Pushy, and we'll get to work on the third act scenery the day after tomorrow.
Okay, and thanks a lot, Mrs. Hall. Gee, with you handling the dances and the scenery and the makeup and the costumes, this thing is really in the bag. Bye, Doctor.
Good day, Morgan. Remember, wrapped up like a mummy.
I'm sorry I interrupted your question, Toddy, but Pushy doesn't talk much about his war experience. He's got the Medal of Honor and Purple Heart and Silver Star and a few other things, you know.
No, I didn't know. Uh-huh. I'm glad to hear about it. I'm inclined to lose sight of the fact that these are not all youngsters under my care. When I... Oh, here, let me help you, dear.
Pull the rug a little that way, dear.
Yeah?
No, a little more.
Oh.
That's it. You were saying?
What was I? Oh, yes, this reappointment.
You do want to be reappointed, don't you, Toddy? I mean, William.
Yes, I do. And largely on account of boys like Morgan. When I address the student body or any part of it, I can see how the world has moved since I went to college myself. In my day, we went to college for fun and to fill in a few years between high school and making a living. Some of these young, old men have lived more than I ever will. And even the inevitable few who are here to avoid work are affected in spite of themselves by the veterans and the ones who are playing for keeps. That's why I like my job more than I ever did. That's why I wish those... What time is it?
3:37. How did you say you'd be notified?
Well, I've only been reappointed once, you know, so the procedure is not exactly traditional. On that occasion, I was notified in person by two members of the board, Merriweather, whom I like and admire, and Mr. Wellman, who is, in my considered opinion, a stinker.
Toddy, is there any doubt in your mind that you will be reappointed?
Well, I'd be an idiot to take it for granted. Reappointment means a salary increase, so...
Toddy, how wonderful!
And a salary increase naturally brings out the watchdog instincts of the conservative members.
You mean that some of them would actually fire their president just to save a few miserable dollars?
Vicky, I love you, but you are shamefully ignorant of some of life's basic facts.
Yes, I know, dear, but...
The Board of Regents is made up largely of wealthy men, retired industrialists, philanthropists. Dissimilar as they are, they have one trait in common. None of them sees anything miserable about a dollar. Furthermore, they...
Telephone, dear. Toddy, aren't you going to answer it?
Let it ring.
But, darling, the Regents.
The Regents are hard to take. Let me play hard to get.
Learn more about the golden age of radio at radioyesteryear.org. That's radioyesteryear.org. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear.
That surround us here today.
As we rejoin the halls of ivy, where... Oh, pardon me. The phone's ringing.
There's the telephone again, William. That's the third call. I think you've taught them a lesson.
Very well. Dr. Hall's residence. Oh, yeah? Yeah? Bad news, you say?
Oh.
Well, frankly, I rather expected it. Thank you for calling. Yes, as soon as I can. Goodbye.
Oh, I'm sorry, dear.
Well, it can't be helped. I suppose I was lucky to get the one I really wanted.
The one you... What do you mean? What did they say?
Well, they said they just got the copy of Wiener's book on cybernetics I ordered. Two of the others I wanted were out of print.
The Board of Regents said that?
Oh, no, dear. The campus bookshop. Remind me to pick up... Oh, Vicky, you thought that
I... Yes, I thought they'd let you go. You know, it wouldn't be so terrible, would it? We could have a nice, long vacation.
Could you use another adjective, such as brief or enjoyable? Or the usual well-earned?
You wouldn't be out of work very long, darling. You're a good college president. You're the best college president I know.
Thank you.
And don't act like I never met any other college presidents. You'll remember I went to Chicago with you for the pedagogical convention last year.
Pedagogical?
I'm sorry.
Yes, you went to keep me from falling into the evil clutches of secondhand book dealers, you said.
Well, anyway, I met at least a dozen college presidents, and an unimpressive lot they were, too, for the most part. Whiskers, string ties, bifocals, and that... Where can I find $2 million for a new gymnasium look?
My dear girl, that where can I find a fat endowment look is as natural to college presidents as the why don't people throw something besides pennies look is to a hurdy-gurdy man's monkey. And a more accurate simile would be hard to find. Oh, was that the phone?
Was what the phone?
Thought I heard the phone. What time is it?
It's 4:04.
Get your coat. Let's go for a walk.
Oh, but Toddy, William, what if the Board of Regents, if they should call while you're out?
Let them find me. One of the janitors on fraternity row has a bloodhound. They can track me.
We can't do it, William. We can't meet rudeness with rudeness.
No, you're right. As usual. My father always said that the real test of manners was being able to meet bad ones with good ones. But blast their eyes, what do they find to discuss all afternoon? I'll bet Wellman has something to do with this.
Wellman, the stinker?
Mr. Wellman, the revolving stinker. He's a stinker any way you look at it.
And just exactly what does the fragrant Mr. Wellman have against you, darling?
Well, I don't know. Simply mutually antagonistic, like water and oil, cats and dogs, cops and cab drivers.
What does Mr. Wellman do for a living?
My personal opinion is that he waylays little children on their way to the candy store and steals their pennies. But according to various other sources of information, he is a soup magnet.
Soup?
Soup. I suspect that his grandmother was a witch and invented a broth which became a family recipe. I'm afraid to eat any, I might turn into a frog. And I can't swim.
You really don't care for Mr. Wellman, do you, dear?
I exaggerate, of course. I do not like Mr. Wellman. Mr. Wellman does not like me. But he has given this college a great deal of money and has been definitely identified with its growth and success. The fact that we don't see eye to eye may possibly be due to my own astigmatism.
Oh, sometimes, Toddy, I wish you wouldn't try to be so fair-minded. Just go on and hate the man. Hit him in the nose. You don't have to have the job.
No. We could hitchhike out to California and pick fruit. Follow the harvest. Do ladders make you nervous?
Oh, not a bit. Do you remember Lulu's Mad Moment? Oh, no, of course you don't. It just played for 3 nights at Gold is Green, I think, but I was Lulu. And I spent most of the second act on a ladder singing Ool Old Out and Elping and...
Sounds like a resounding success.
It was a dismal mistake. The critics, however, were kind enough to say that if the rest of the play had been as handsomely constructed as either the ladder or Miss Victoria Cromwell, Lulu's mad moment might have been extended to a somewhat wacky fortnight.
I think I remember...
Well, about time. Shall I accept the reappointment, or shall we pick apricots?
You just play hard to get for 10 or 15 seconds, dear, and then give in gracefully.
Dr. Hall's resident.
Yeah?
Oh. Well, that's quite all right. Not at all. Goodbye. Wrong number.
What time is it?
A few minutes after four.
Oh, this is unpardonable. The regents know I'm waiting here to receive the news. My appointment or non-appointment is not of such world-shaking importance as to merit this prolonged discussion, except to me. I think I shall...
Now stop pacing, Toddy. Well, remember, I don't mind ladders.
Very well, Lulu. May I call you Lulu?
It would be a little presumptuous. You never saw me as Lulu, which you may count among your blessings.
I saw you as Mary in Give Them Tears in London. That's all any man could ask.
Give Them Tears. Oh, I should love to play that again. It was a lovely play, wasn't it, darling?
If you do it again, I'd like to play the vicar. I could do it, you know. I saw it 27 times.
And bought your own tickets on a professor's salary.
My sabbatical year turned out to be a theatrical 5 months. A fool and his money rushed in where an angel was standing in the wings. To combine a few metaphors. You were very kind to the visiting American, Vicky.
The visiting American was very refreshing, Toddy. It was fun teaching you how many shillings in the pound, how to eat fish and chips, and the Lambeth Walk.
Had you noticed me in the audience ever? I mean, before...
My dear, I think I saw you every time after the first one. And then the night my dresser told me there was a gentleman to see me.
If you'll wait here just a moment, sir, I'll find out if Miss Cromwell can see you. She doesn't hardly ever see visitors before the show.
Oh, I promise I won't keep Miss Cromwell but a moment. I'm sorry if I called at a bad time.
Oh, that's all right, sir. Anybody that can get past old Eric and the doorman deserves a bit of a break. How did you manage that, sir?
How did I get past the doorman? I don't know. I didn't see any doorman.
Well, just a moment, sir. I'll speak to Miss Cromwell. Miss, there's a gentleman wants to see you. A Yank by the looks of him.
What does he want, Penny?
I don't know. He didn't say. But he's a pleasant-spoken man and nice-looking. None of the ordinary runner backstages.
I'll see him.
Miss Cromwell, I realize this is perhaps an imposition, but I'm leaving for the United States in a few days, and I felt I must tell you something.
Yes, Mr. Hall? Or is it Professor Hall?
Well, it doesn't matter. What does matter is that I am not ordinarily much of a theatergoer, but I have seen you in this very beautiful play 26 times. I would feel that I'd been lacking in simple courtesy had I not told you in person how much genuine pleasure you have given me. The hours I have spent watching you will be a memory which I shall treasure to the rest of my somewhat dull life. I'm most grateful.
Mr. Hall, I... Really, this is very... Penny, go away.
Oh, yes, miss.
Please sit down, Mr. Hall.
Oh, thank you. But I've been told this is a rather inconvenient time to visit backstage. My ignorance of theatrical procedures...
Your ignorance of the rules, Mr. Hall, will not be used against you. And you don't want an autographed photo or an endorsement of some brand of petrol or to discuss a tentative new motion picture over champagne.
None of those things, no. No, I merely wish to say thank you. I might also say that dressing room views of one's favorite actress are popularly supposed to be disillusioning. I'm always glad to help kick a superstition in the head.
I'm glad I'm your favorite actress, Mr. Hall. You're becoming my favorite audience. Tell me, why did you wait so long to come and tell me these nice things?
Well, frankly, I hadn't the courage until tonight. And the thought of going home without hearing you speak to me in person was simply intolerable. So thank you once more, and I...
Oh, better... no, don't go, Mr. Hall. Sit down again. I want to talk to you some more. Anyone who thinks as highly of me as you do and says so beautifully is to me a very stimulating conversationalist.
Well, Miss Cromwell, I wouldn't have mentioned this, but inasmuch as you have introduced the subject... Well...
How would you like it inscribed, Mr. Hall?
Oh, just say something like, with kindest regards to... How did you know what I meant?
I think because I wanted you to want.
Oh, good heavens, I'm sorry. I've overstayed. What was that, curtain time, overture?
Darling, it's the doorbell.
Well, I didn't mean to
Toddy,
say...
Toddy, darling, the doorbell. Answer the doorbell.
The doorbell? The doorbell? Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
William, you were wool gathering.
Yes, I guess I was. And doesn't wool make a lovely comforter?
What on earth are you talking about?
Excuse me, dear. I'll see who's at the door. Good evening, Miss Merriweather, Mr. Wellman. How are you? We were just debating about taking a walk. Another 10 minutes, we'd probably have been gone. Victoria, I think you know Mr. Merriweather.
Oh, yes, indeed I do. Good afternoon, Mr. Merriweather.
Mrs. Hall, I'm glad to see you. In fact, I'm always...
Excuse me, Mr. Merriweather, but I'm afraid Mrs. Hall doesn't know Mr. Wellman. Victoria, may I present Mr. Clarence Wellman?
How do you do, Mr. Wellman?
Mrs. Hall, we haven't met before, formally. But I remember you from 1934, I think. In England, Gold is Green, in Lulu's Mad Moment.
Was that the one where I played the witch brewing a wicked broth which turned men into frogs?
No. No, Lulu's Mad Moment was where you spent most of the second act on a ladder, remember?
That was it, the ladder. I'll have to admit, Mrs. Hall, that you were... interesting. But that play, how long did it run?
Run, Mr. Wellman, is much too vigorous a word. It tottered for 3 days and then fell down dead.
I saw it on a Wednesday.
Oh, then you saw it at its peak. It opened on Tuesday and closed on Thursday. Mr. Merriweather, did you have the fortune, good or bad, to see Lulu's Mad Moment?
No, I didn't, Mrs. Hall. But I saw Give Them Tears 5 times in New York. I went the first time as somebody's guest and 4 times as lots of people's host.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Merriweather.
Gad, ma'am, if I'd been a couple of 100 years younger and hadn't had a wife who understood me, you'd have found me at the stage door every night with a bunch of emeralds in my hot little hand.
I don't like to intrude on your memoirs, gentlemen, but could I serve you any refreshments?
You mean tea? Dr. Hall?
No, Mr. Wellman, I didn't mean tea. I meant wine, whiskey, gin, or beer. Although tea is available.
If, of course, you care for it so late in the afternoon.
I'd have a bourbon and branch water, but my medico says no. Plus the old fool.
Personally, I'm a teetotaler, Doctor. I don't approve of drink or of drinking.
Well, I'm seldom seen reeling across the campus myself, Mr. Wellman. Could I get you some sherry, Victoria?
No, thank you, William. Won't you gentlemen sit down?
No, thank you, Mrs. Hall. We're pretty late as it is. Apologies for keeping you waiting, Doctor.
Waiting for what, Mr. Merriweather?
Waiting for what? Don't you realize today is the deadline for your reappointment as president of Ivy, Dr. Hall?
Good gracious, so it is. William, did you hear?
Yes, I did.
Well, I'm glad you weren't brooding about it, Hall. Knew you weren't the type to stew around. Right temperament for President of Ivy, always said so. Well, Vance, you're the committee. Tell the man.
Tell the man? Oh, yeah, the appointment, yeah. Well, I suppose it has to be settled sometime, one way or the other.
Dr. Hall, I have been requested by the Board of Regents to inform you of your reappointment as President of Ivy College for the further term of 5 years.
With more money, too.
I'm the committee of one, Merriweather.
Well, go ahead and commit. Stop stalling around.
For a further term of 5 years, Doctor, with an increase in stipend of $2,500.
Thank you, Mr. Wellman. I presume I shall be notified formally. I shall also thank the Board of Regents in writing.
Does this mean, William, that we can't go to California?
I'm afraid so, dear. But possibly on our vacation we can pick an orange. Must you go, gentlemen?
Yes, got to get home, Doctor. That confounded board kept yammering away at each other all afternoon and a lot of silly nonsense. Wasted 2 good hours I might have spent working on my railroad.
Your railroad, Mr. Merriweather?
Model railroad, Mrs. Hall. I build them. You ever try it, Doctor?
No, I never have, Mr. Merriweather.
I'll leave it alone. Steel filings in the carpets, glue in your ears, wife sulking in the corner. Come on, Clarence. A night, Doctor, and congratulations to you and to the college.
Thank you.
Night, Mrs. Hall.
Good night.
Thanks for being so kind and patient with my nephew.
Your nephew?
Pushy Morgan. Stumblebum. You've taught him how to know his left foot from his right. He's crazy about you. I am, too. Come on, Wellman. What are you stalling around for?
Oh, good night, Doctor. Good night.
Good night.
Congratulations, Doctor.
Thank you, Lulu. You may come down from the ladder now. Oh, what an afternoon. I promise you I won't go through that again.
Won't you, Toddy? 5 years isn't so long.
Next time I'll be ready for them. I'll be equipped to laugh at them, if you'll help me.
Well, of course, dear. With what?
Teach me that waltz, Clark. I think I might have a flair for that sort of thing. Now, is this the way? One, two, three. One, two, three.
Oh, no. No, no. Look, Toddy. It's like this.
And those were the Halls of Ivy, as created for Ivy Productions by Don Quinn and directed by Nat Wolfe. The Halls are nice people, and we think you should know them better. Victoria is...
Edna Best.
And Dr. Hall is...
Gail Gordon.
The other residents of Ivy are Herbert Rawlinson, Gloria Gordon, Herbert Butterfield, Willard Waterman, Lee Menar, Norman Field, and Leo Clary. Henry Russell composed and conducted the music, and your announcer, Don Stanley.
We all hope you'll come back to Ivy. Good night.
And the halls of Ivy that surround us here today, and we will not forget, though we be far, far away.
The Halls of Ivy audition program from June of 1949. In a moment, we'll experience murder at midnight as this edition of Yesteryear continues.
Learn more about the golden age of radio at radioyesteryear.org. That's radioyesteryear.org. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear. Here's Craig Roberts.
Murder at Midnight was a series produced by KFI Los Angeles and syndicated in 1946. It featured tales of the supernatural and macabre by radio's top writers and performers. The stories were tales of death and the uncanny. The program tried to do what The Inner Sanctum did so memorably on the networks. Charles Hall contributed the creepy organ music, the director was Anton M. Leder, and that sinister voice narrator whose voice dripped "Murder at Midnight" was none other than Raymond Morgan, a former Long Island minister who had given up the cloth for the excitement of radio. Return with us now to those thrilling days of yesteryear for Murder at Midnight and The Kabbalah from December of 1946. Another classic radio moment from the archives of yesteryear.
Murder at Midnight.
Which way did he go?
That way. Down through the garden.
This storm. It's so dark you can't see. Dr. Rudd. There. There at the bottom of the terrace.
Professor Labarge. Labarge, why I... Oh, good Lord.
What is it?
He must have fallen down the steps, broken his neck.
He's dead.
Midnight, the witching hour when the night is darkest, our fears the strongest, and our strength at its lowest ebb. Midnight, when the graves gape open and death strikes. How? You'll learn the answer in just a minute in The Kabbalah. Thank you. And now, Murder at Midnight. Tales of mystery and terror by radio's masters of the macabre. Our story by Robert Newman is The Cabala. A rambling house on the outskirts of a small university town. And in the house, a room that seems more like the cell of a medieval alchemist than the study of a college professor. Its walls lined with ancient volumes and astrolabes and other curious instruments. Bent over his desk, Dr. Rudd does not hear the knock on the door at first. But when it's repeated, he says,
"Come in."
"Alan's going, Father. He wanted to say goodnight to you."
"Oh, yes, Adam. Good night."
"I was terribly sorry to hear about the decision of the Board of Trustees, sir. I mean, they're refusing to give you a grant to go on with your research."
"Oh, that. Well, it doesn't matter. I've about decided to give up the whole project anyway."
"Your book?"
"Yes."
"Father, you're not serious. I thought you were almost finished with it."
"I am. All but the last chapter. I just can't seem to write that without additional research. And without the last chapter, why, the rest of the book is meaningless."
"Well, isn't there anyone you could talk to about it, sir? Anyone who could help you?"
"I doubt it, Alan. I think I know as much about the occult as anyone in the world. Except perhaps one man."
"Who is that, Father?"
"The man I studied under at the University of Paris. And I haven't heard from him in over 10 years. I'm not even sure that he's still alive." "Too bad this is the 20th century, not the 12th.
"How so, Dr. Rudd?"
"Oh, it would have been very simple then. A pentacle, a pair of corpse candles, and I could summon up someone who would make things very easy for me. Yes, right now I really believe I would sell my soul for the help I need."
"Father, you mustn't say things like that, even as a joke."
"Well, you're right, Barbara. And no one knows it better than I. Well, good night, Alan. See you in the morning."
"Right, Dr. Rudd. Good night."
"I'll walk you down to the road, Alan."
"Oh, fine, dear. Pretty depressed, isn't he?"
"Father? Yes. Not that I blame him. 4 years' work. The definitive book on occultism, the supernatural. Alan!"
"Yes, I see it, too. Someone or something lying in the road. Come on."
An old man, and he's dressed so strangely."
"He looks like an Arab. Wonder what he's doing around here. Anyway, he seems in a bad way. Here, I'll carry him into the house. You run ahead and tell your father."
"All right."
"In here, Alan, in my study."
"All right."
"I put him on the couch. What's wrong with him?"
"Well, it's hard to say, but I think it's just exhaustion."
"Oh, his pulse is very weak. Barbara, call Dr. Stevens."
"Of course, Father. He's opening his eyes."
"Where? What is this place?" "No, it's all right. You're among friends. We're sending for a doctor."
"A doctor? Ah, you're kind, but it's too late. Allah stretches his hand out for me."
"Nonsense. All you need is some food, rest."
No, I'm dying. But if you are indeed friends, one last request. Will you grant it?"
"If we possibly can."
"I am a Hajj, a Sufi. I come of a long, ancient line. Will you see that I get proper burial?"
"Oh, yes, of course."
"I have no gold, money, but..."
"He's fainting. Loose this rope, Alan."
"Right." "Say, he's got something hidden here. A parchment scroll."
"The Kabbalah! You've taken the Kabbalah."
"It's all right."
No, you must not. It's a curse. Into the fire. Destroy it. If you use it..."
"Father."
"Yes. Yes, he's dead. May his soul rest in peace."
You're very quiet tonight, Dr. Rudd. Thinking about the funeral?
Huh?
Our Arab friend?
Oh, yes, Alan. Partly. And partly about this parchment he had hidden in his room. It seems to be a form of the Kabbalah.
That's right. That's what he called it when he got so excited. Wanted you to destroy it. But the Kabbalah is just the science of letters and numbers, isn't it?
It's much more than that, Barbara. It's the science of the mystical attributes of letters and numbers. The basis for almost all occultism. This system is different from any I ever saw before.
Different? How?
Well, this particular system tells how a question can be written out, the letters changed into numbers and manipulated. When the numbers are changed back into letters, they will answer the question.
Listen, Professor, what do you say we try it?
Try it?
Sure. Of course, it's a lot of nonsense, but, well, why not?
All right. This paper and pencil's on my desk.
What are you going to ask, Father?
Oh, something simple, something we can check.
Me, I'm going to ask something really practical. Okay, Professor, let's go.
How are you coming, Father?
Almost finished. Ah, let's see. Zadek. Mem. Vav. Great Scott.
What is it?
Look at this. Here's my question. Will we have any visitors today?
Mm-hmm.
And here's the answer. Two visitors. Professor Laborde and someone else.
Professor Laborde?
Do you remember my telling you yesterday that there was one person in the world who could give me the help I needed to finish my book?
Yes.
That man was Professor Laborde.
Father, you don't really believe it, do you?
I don't know. I told you I haven't seen or heard from him in 10 years. But just the same...
Dr. Rudd, look.
Hmm?
Look here, I got something, too.
What is it, Alan?
Well, here's my question. How can the professor get the money to continue with his research?
Yes.
Here's the answer. Call Mark Endicott.
What?
Of course. Why don't you, Father? He's always been interested in you and your work.
Well, I just never thought of it. I'll go in and call him right away.
Well, Father, did you get him?
Yes. Yes, it's very strange.
In what way?
He said that he'd been thinking about me a good deal lately, and he's driving out here this evening to see me.
There. That's the answer to your question. Two visitors. Professor Laborde and someone else. Well, he must be the someone else.
You think so?
Oh, of course.
Somehow, I don't.
Well, what do you mean, sir?
I don't know. Except that I don't like it.
It's beginning to look as if our Kabbalah is a washout after all.
What makes you say that?
Well, 11 o'clock and no sign of either Laborde or Endicott.
I can't understand it. Endicott definitely said that he was driving out here and that he was leaving immediately.
He probably changed his mind because of the storm. It's still pretty bad out, isn't it?
Yes, but it's not like him. You think he'd phone us and let us know? Oh, perhaps that's he now. Hello? Yes? This is Professor Rudd speaking. Who? Oh, yes. What? But that's impossible. I spoke to him only a few hours ago, and... Why? I can't believe it. You're sure? Oh, I see. But thank you. Thank you very much. Goodbye.
Who was it, Father?
That was Mark Endicott's attorney.
His attorney? What did he want?
Mark Endicott was killed at about 6 o'clock this afternoon.
Killed?
On his way here, an auto accident. His attorney called to tell me Endicott had left me a $5,000 bequest for research.
What?
Father, the Kabbalah. It said you were to call him for the money to continue your work. It didn't actually say he was coming out here.
No.
Wait a minute. You mean you really think
I don't know, Alan. But I do know that if I hadn't called him, he wouldn't have started driving here in the storm. He wouldn't have had the accident and been killed. And I probably wouldn't have gotten the money.
But, Father, if it's true, If it has some sort of supernatural power, then what about Professor Laborde? It did say he was coming.
Oh, please, Barbara, I told you I don't know. Endicott was my friend. Now he's dead. And somehow I feel as if I...
Father, the door.
Yes. Yes, let's see who it is.
Great Scott, Professor, if it is Laborde, do you realize what this means?
Yes, sir.
If it is, are the things priceless, absolutely priceless? Why, I hope...
I beg your pardon. I'm sorry to trouble you,
but... Come in, Professor Laborde. Come in. We've been expecting you for some time now.
An ancient manuscript which can foretell the future. A dead man and a visitor from the dead. As the clock strikes 12 for... Murder at Midnight. And now, back to Murder at Midnight and the Kabbalah. Just a moment or two later, and Professor Laborde is being shown into Dr. Rudd's study.
In here, Professor Laborde. Barbara, will you take the professor's things?
Of course, Father.
Thank you, my dear. You're very kind. But there's something I do not understand, Dr. Rudd. When you opened the door, you said you had been expecting me.
Since early this afternoon.
But that is impossible. Completely impossible. I'm here entirely by accident. I had no idea you lived here or anywhere near here. I lost my way in the storm, knocked at your particular door by chance to ask for directions.
Nevertheless, we've been expecting you.
But excuse me, how could you have been?
Alan.
Yes, sir?
Show Professor Laborde the Kabbalah, will you please?
Right, Professor. Here you are, sir.
Kabbalah?
Look at it, Professor. Tell me what you think of it.
Interesting. Very interesting. Of course, I cannot be sure without examining it. But it appears to be even older than the Black Grimoire. And its form resembles that of the Key of Solomon.
Professor Laborde, it's my belief that it is the Key of Solomon.
What? But it can't be. It's been written about for centuries, of course, mentioned in hundreds of works, from Trismegistus down. But there's never been any proof that it ever actually existed. And still, where did you get it?
From an old Arab who came here last night and died here.
The main thing is, we tested it.
Tested it?
Yes, we asked two questions. The answer to one of them prophesied your coming here. And the other, well, that came true, too.
But this is beyond words. If it's true, then it's the most priceless discovery that has ever... Professor Rudd, may I try it? Use it to ask a question, too?
Well, I don't know, Professor Laborde.
Please. For years now, ever since I began studying the supernatural, there's been something, one thing I've always said I'd give my very life to know. If it can tell me that, you must let me, Rudd. And you must let me do it while I'm alone.
Well, all right.
Good.
Come on, Alan, Barbara. We'll wait outside.
Is it now, Professor?
It's 20 hours.
He's been at it for quite a while.
Yes. If he doesn't call us in another minute or two, we'll go in.
I'm probably being very silly, but I don't like this, any of it.
Why not, Father?
I don't know, but... What's
no,
that?
No. Professor Laborde, yes, come on.
Not that.
Professor Laborde, what is it? What's happened? What are you doing?
He's burning something in the fire.
Father, it's his hands. He's holding them in the fire, burning.
Oh, great Scott, Professor Laborde, stop. Stop. Have you gone mad?
Fire! Only fire can burn my hands clean again. I asked. Now I must pay.
Laborde.
Let me go. Let go. I am coming.
Professor Nabon, come back. Quick, Alan.
Okay. Which way did he go?
That way. Down through the garden.
The storm. It's so dark you can't see. Dr. Rudd, there. There, at the bottom of the terrace.
Professor DeBarge. DeBarge, why... Oh, good Lord.
What is it?
He must have fallen down the steps, broken his neck. He is dead.
All right now, Alan. Put him down. Now, gently.
Yes, sir.
Father, are you sure that...
Yes, Barbara, I'm sure. He's dead.
But what made him do it? Go running out there that way?
It must have been something to do with the Kabbalah. He was going to ask it a question.
Yes, Alan, it has something to do with the Kabbalah.
And standing there with his hands in the fire, as if he were trying to burn them clean. Father, what was the question he asked? What answer did he get?
I think perhaps I can guess.
The old Arab, he warned us, remember? He said it was accursed, evil. That if we used it... Wait a minute, Dr. Rudd.
Hmm?
Laborde said he'd give his life to know the answer to that question. And now he's dead.
Yes, Alan, that's what was in my mind, too. That and one more thing. Do you remember what I said just before you found the old Arab in the garden? That I'd make a pact with the devil, sell my very soul for the help I needed to finish my book?
No, Father, you're not serious. You don't mean you really believe
I've lived too long, my dear, seen too many strange things to disbelieve anything. If the Kabbalah is everything we think it is, if it is the key to the future, to all knowledge, if it can answer any question we put to it, then there are only two sources from which it can draw its power. One good and one evil.
And you think...
If God had wished us to be able to foresee the future, we should be able to foresee it. On the other hand, if it's evil, well, there's usually a penalty involved.
Laborde, he said something about pain, too. Who must be paid, and how?
There's only one way to find out, through the Kabbalah itself. Give it to me, Alan.
No, please, no.
I'm sorry, Barbara, I must. There's no need for you to stay here, or Alan.
No, Father. We'll stay, both of us.
Very well. Then, here goes.
Shivering, darling. Are you cold? Shall I build up the fire?
No, Elna. I'm not cold. What was that?
It sounded like the outside door opening.
Maybe
Father. Father, what is it? Are you finished?
Yes. Yes, I'm finished.
And what?
Look. Here's the question.
Who must be paid and how?
And here's the answer.
Turn around. And you will see.
Father, the door behind us, it just opened.
Yes.
I don't dare turn around.
You needn't. Right in front of you, there on the wall. Look.
Something black, like a stain, a blot. But it's spreading, moving.
Like an octopus. Or like...
It's shadow. It's coming toward us.
What in heaven's name is it?
Whatever it is, whatever happens to us, no one shall ever again be cursed as we've been cursed. The Kabbalah, give it to me.
Father, what are you doing?
What I should have done when I first saw it. Destroy it. Throw it into the fire.
It's coming closer. Closer. Professor, isn't there anything we can do? Anything that...
Father, look. The parchment burning. There on the wall.
The shadow of the Andions, in the shape of the Crux Ansata, the first cross.
Good Lord. The shadow, it's wavering, drawing back, retreating. I'm going to turn around, see what...
No, wait. Wait until... All right. Now.
There's nothing there.
Laborde? Dr. Laborde?
Someone just came in. Who's there? Who is that?
Oh, excuse me. I'm terribly sorry. I'm looking for someone. An old man with white hair and white beard. His name's... Holy smoke, there he is, Dr. Laborde. Dr. Laborde.
I can't answer you. He's dead.
Dead?
Who are you, anyway?
Well, an attendant at a private hospital in town. We've been taking care of him ever since he got to this country. Nervous breakdown. He disappeared this afternoon, and he'd been talking about you so much lately that I had a hunch he might have come out here.
Talking about me? But he said he had no idea I lived here.
Of course he knew. I told you he wasn't right in the head. That was one of the signs.
Father, if it's true, if his mind was going, that would explain what he did. Burning his hands, running away like that.
You mean the Kabbalah didn't have any occult power? What about the money from Endicott?
Well, just a coincidence.
And what just happened? That shadow we saw on the wall?
Well, it was only a shadow. It could have been just our imagination.
Yes, Barbara, it could have been. But somehow, I don't think it was.
An old professor stands next to the body of his friend, staring at the fireplace where the secret of the ages has gone up in smoke as the clock strikes 12 for
murder at midnight. Remember to be with us again when death whispers from the darkness in an unknown tongue and the clocks strike 12 for murder at midnight.
The part of Dr. Rudd was played by James Van Dyke. With music by Bert Berman, Murder at Midnight was directed by Anton M. Leader.
From December of 1946, it's been Murder at Midnight with the Kabbalah. Well, I'm afraid that's all the time we have for today, but join us again next week at the same time and invite a friend to listen to enjoy more great moments from the golden age of radio. I'm Craig Roberts with those fabulous days of yesteryear. Till next time, so long.
Radio, remember radio. We'd sit and close our eyes and use our imagination. The comedy, mystery, the fireside chat. Together we sat, listening nightly to our favorite show.
Copyright the Swing and Big Band Preservation Society, Incorporated. All rights reserved.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, our own version of Cole Porter's Begin the Beginning.